Everyone's asleep.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting from New Zealand. We are sponsored by the High Tea Cafe and also a number of books on the homepage there, including The Range of Illusion and How to Get Crowdfunding by Kevin Lawton, or something of that nature. The banners are up on the VinnieEastwoodShow.com. And bear in mind, this is a listener-supported broadcast, so the vast majority of funding that we use to, you know, pay the bills and everything comes from you, the listener. This isn't corporate media. This is real media, so it doesn't... I'm not going to be able to get corporate sponsorship, I don't think. However, sponsorship from the people is more than possible and have been running off it for at least the last 4+ years. So go to thevinnieeastwoodshow.com and donate or start up a regular gift today, either through the PayPal or the KiwiBank account. My very special guest today is Ava Moore. Ava, welcome to the program.
Hi, Vinny. Thanks for having me.
Now, we're having a chance to do a bit of an update on Bill Brockbrader's status. And I'm sorry we've been putting this off again and again. I've had so much on. But, yeah, please give us a little bit of the news.
Right. Well, thank you for having me again. So there's been a lot going on, and I'm going to try and condense as much as possible. I have something that I would like to read. Can I start with a poem? I know it's like... I actually received this poem today, and it was from a guy within the federal prison system. I think it's fitting. It says, "We want them to have self-worth, so we take or destroy what they have of value. We want them to be responsible, so we take away all responsibility. We want them to be part of the community, so we isolate them from our community. We want them to be positive and constructive, so we degrade and make them less than useless. We want them to be trustworthy, so we put them where there is no trust. We want them to be nonviolent, so we put them where violence is all around them. Today, this is what I received from an unnamed prison guard." So, thank you for letting me start with that. I think that is something that can be seen as the foundation to which the entire world is running. And the encouragement is to stay in victim mentality and to, you know, surrender and defeat and, you know, lick your wounds. Well, that's not the case here. So I'm going to read something else just to kind of conceptualize everything. I wrote it down because otherwise I will ramble and take up the majority of the 25 minutes I have. Bill Brockbrader is a political prisoner and human rights activist who is currently serving a 22-month of 30-month sentence in a federal detention in SeaTac, Seattle, Washington. Bill was eligible to be moved to a halfway house on March 12th, though that move was deferred and has yet to occur. Bill's next significant date is June 12th, when he will be eligible to move to a home confinement-like scenario. With good time applied, Bill will ultimately be released from his incarceration September 12th, 2014. Even if he's not released to halfway house or to home confinement, he will be released by September 12th, 2014. On March 24th, Bill filed his appellate brief for the direct appeal of his criminal trial. In this brief, he points out indisputable evidence of prosecutorial misconduct and court misconduct, the elicitation of false and misleading statements from a deputy Nevada attorney general that testified at his trial, and that the laws that were used to convict violate the Constitution's ban of ex post facto and double jeopardy punishment. The immediate reaction of the prosecution was to attempt to strike Bill's brief, his appellate brief, as they successfully did with much of his evidence he tried to submit during his trial, and to request a three-month extension in response to the brief. Normally, it only takes 30 days, and 30 days is usually what's given to respond. Though their extension request was successful, they were unable to strike the brief, and the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals ordered that it be filed. This was a victory for Bill and his attorney, as the government has been completely successful to this point in suppressing the truth in his trial and eliciting seemingly damaging testimony from Bill himself. During the time and timing of his appeal, Bill was to be released, but however was instead, on March 21st, 2014, moved into solitary confinement. He was held in a special housing unit called the SHU at SeaTac for 19 days for investigation. He was released without any disciplinary action normally associated with an investigation.
So they shooed him from the SHU.
Yeah. After 19 days, they held him without reason for 19 days without explanation as to why. So that was really interesting. During this time, there was much in the news about the effects of prisons using solitary confinement and the effect on prisoners and the human rights issues that occur as a result. There was a huge meeting with the subcommittee and Senator Durbin, and also the woman Piper, who's responsible for Orange is the New Black. There was a huge testimony given around solitary confinement and the effects on the inmates. So it was right around the same time. It was really interesting to see this happen. Much has been said of the videos that have been created to discredit Bill, namely an ex-retired SEAL. Bill is looking forward to addressing all of these videos himself when he is released. And the people that make these videos, you have to understand there's money that is thrown to people to ensure disinformation gets out there. It's a billion-dollar industry, COINTELPRO, CIA. It's, you know, and so anytime you see a lot of effort, like it even made it to the news in Virginia Beach, which is the head of the, you know, SEAL Team 6 DevGru home, you know. So to make it to the news, that means they had to like amp it up to another level. So Bill is looking forward to addressing all of this himself. While Bill has been incarcerated, he continues to work towards the future and bring about necessary changes in the world. Bill has much to thank and give to those that have supported him on this journey. He also must give thanks to the people who have supported me and stuck by me, because I could not have done this alone. And I just want to say thank you to everyone out there who has the capacity to go intrinsically and discern from themselves and hold space until a time where they can discern completely if they can't in any given moment, which I will admit, Vinny, like in the last 2 years, it has been like light speed learning curve for me. I've been boot camping it and working for a lot of answers, and it's not been easy, but it's been an honor. Bill has been inspired by the work going on with the quantum energy generator, Hope Girl, and the QEG it's called. He intends to build a proof of concept model of the QEG when he is released. And he's actually asking if he could have, if there are people out there that can hear this, he's looking for support to start the building of the rotor so that it's ready when he gets out. And because he's got a background in laser engineering, he knows how to cut the steel. The funny thing is while he was in solitary confinement, he wanted me to send him the schematics for the QEG. I'm not sure if you've followed that, but it's an over unity generator. And I sent the proof of concepts to him while he was in solitary. He did receive them, approve them, and is like scratching at his eyeballs to get out, because 2 years ago he was talking about needing an over unity generator to come forward so that he could partner it with a hydroxy generator, which he built one in 2010 and took it to Harry Reid's office, Senator Harry Reid in Nevada. So there's a lot of things that are falling into place, which he kind of foresaw coming into place. And he's super, super excited. So he wants to build this proof of concept that would take an over unity generator and partner it with a hydroxy generator. And its ability to use power to a 40 kilowatt internal combustion engine generator. It's also his intention to work towards supporting Elizabeth Warren, which is interesting, who she is asking to be taken off the presidential ballot. They keep running her names in the polling, but she keeps saying she doesn't want to be president. And he said, who else could you think to want to vote for than somebody who's like saying they don't want the job? That's the president we want. I thought that was pretty funny. The positive changes that those of us to have sought after in the world are occurring, and they are occurring slowly but surely. The system is starting to clean itself out. It's just, I think the majorities are still kind of captivated in entertainment mode, and we're dealing with a generation of gamers who have to understand that that's what this life is all about. This life is a game. And instead of sitting sedentary, the laws of physics and the laws of gravity are the dictating parameters, you know, for programming coding. And so we have to start to get up and program the reality that we want, and stop playing with the controller. We need to take control. So I believe very wholeheartedly that intrinsically, there's been a lot of changes that have occurred in the last 2 years, and it's just taking the external world to catch up a little bit. He came forward, Bill came forward in 2012 in a Project Camelot interview with Carrie Cassidy, 17 days after the announcement and enactment of the NDAA's partnership in Agenda 21-like scenario. He did so in the hopes of bringing light to the connection to the use of Tomahawk missiles and their modern-day advancement towards drone technology. Bill began his naval career in 91 as a front fire controlman, or weapons electronic specialist. So fire controlman or weapons electronic specialist. His path took a dramatic turn when he accepted an assignment to a special mission unit, SMU, to operate as a controller of Tomahawk missiles similar to that in the Air Force forward air controllers. He received the same training that all Navy SEALs receive, with additional training to use of the equipment that controls Tomahawk missiles during their thermal phase on their mission. This was done to improve accuracy and effectiveness of the weapons while limiting collateral damage as much as possible. Operators were also able to conduct after-action damage assessment to ensure the success of each mission. These operators were commonly referred to as the Nines, or Nines, a tongue-in-cheek reference to the obvious lack of SEAL Team 9 in the Navy's naming convention of SEAL teams. That's the Navy War Development Group, DevGru. The Nines were never officially designed as Navy SEALs, and its existence was suppressed in much of the same way as SEAL Team 6 is the unofficial name of the Naval Warfare Development Group, DevGru, and therefore does not itself exist. Its existence was suppressed until supposed killing of Osama bin Laden in May 2011. Now this name, SEAL Team 6, is widely known and acknowledged, but until this event, it existed in conversation only and officially was denied. Bill was stationed on AEGIS, I don't know that term, ship platform, as well as ships that regularly had a SEAL compartment on board to further conceal the existence of his SMU. Bill conducted dozens and dozens of missions throughout his career, despite his concerns that his missions were becoming less military and more terroristic in nature. This all came to a head when, during one mission, Bill chose to divert a second missile attack on the same target in order to prevent deaths of many innocent people attempting to rescue the victims of those that were first attacked. So that's called double striking, and it's geared towards murdering the rescue aid workers or, you know, human beings that happened to be in proximity to the first detonation who had enough heart and soul to try and help those that may have just been hit with either shrapnel or, you know, in line of fire. The concept is now widely known about and understood by the term double strike. It was because of the act that Bill found himself court-martialed for unrelated charges that had the effect of bringing him back to the program. His conviction was also kept over him for the rest of his career so that he would continue to execute missions without questions and the effects that they might have. Bill would argue that his mission was revealed in abstract in Jeremy Scahill's last book, Dirty Wars. In this book, which was published after Bill first came out, Scahill quotes General Hugh Shelton, the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff during Clinton, as saying, "They are a surgical type of unit. They are not used to assault a fortress or anything. That's what the Army and Marine Corps do. But if you need someone that can skydive from 30 miles away, go down the chimney of a castle and blow it up from the inside, these are the ones you want to call on." Now, in this book, Jeremy Scahill's Dirty Wars, that is a reference to the program, going down the chimney of a castle to blow it up from the inside. What is being referred to there is by Tomahawk, basically driving it vertically down into the ground so that it ignites under the soil and basically collapse the building. So that's a really interesting quote from Jeremy Scahill's book. Bill also talks about common maneuvers such as flight paths of airliners that hit the Pentagon and 9/11. It doesn't take much to estimate that the amount of explosive that would have been needed to blow up a castle from the inside would exceed the amount that could be carried by a standard SEAL platoon skydiving 30 miles away. So what he's trying to say is that, you know, basically the partnership of the SEAL teams with the Tomahawks in the early 1990s to, you know, currently, you know, based on what Jeremy Scahill is saying and shedding light on JSOC. Recently, there was a killing of a 16-year-old boy in Yemen who was labeled a terrorist because of his father's religious political beliefs. And so this 16-year-old boy was killed in Yemen. Bill is currently still in SeaTac. He is an operator. And what I've come to realize is there's been purpose to everything that's happened in the last 2 years. And it's been an interesting turn of events. There was a scenario where both transcripts and audio recording were leaked from, we believe, the prosecution's office to this ex-retired SEAL, who then misdrew some of the information. He made reference to it as if it was from the trial, and it, in fact, was not from the trial, which is really interesting. And these are the types of things that Bill looks forward to talk about when he does get out. But I think the way that anyone who is kind of sitting back, scratching their head, or wanting, you know, a brief snapshot response, the idea is basically that he pulled a Galileo and had to go into basically, you know, like a chess maneuver where he was being positioned to argue truth only to have that truth be potentially used as a third strike in comparison with the scripted original transcripts. And that would equal to perjury, which would have taken Bill out of the game. So he had to kind of make some sacrifices in the interim so that he could wait until his appeal, because that is the reality, is that they knew that in appeal, Bill's charges would be overturned, and they didn't care. They were willing to do whatever it took to lie. They being the prosecutor and the Nevada AG, the attorney general, to basically ensure that he was shut up for the last 2 years. And this is important, i.e. why you should care, is because, you know, for those of you that have had the opportunity to see the very final transcripts from his sentencing, you'll recall that he makes reference to a letter that was written and submitted to the court as evidence. And in this letter, it's basically a soft confession that the situation that was orchestrated fictitiously in the 98 original charges, where he was found guilty of consensual sex with a minor, there is this letter that has now appeared through this recent trial that proves that the timeline that was scripted in 1998 does not match this letter. So there's evidence that's been put forward from the opposing side that contradicts. And this is good news, because without this type of situation where Bill has engaged, he would not have that evidence, which he does now. And, you know, I've kind of been an investigator. If you could imagine stumbling into, you know, Chelsea Manning's situation right now, but let's pretend that everything actually happened with Chelsea Manning in 1998, when there was no social media. You know, there's MySpace, but, you know, barely. And there was no sharing of data transfer like there is now with social media and Twitter and Facebook and, you know, Instagram hashtagging, you know. So it's a touchy subject, and one that most people get triggered before they can even hear the actual realities of what I've witnessed. And the thing that most people, I would like most people to hear, is that my reasons for being here are bigger than any personal attachment to Bill. What sustained me in the last 2 years is the reality that I myself am a victim of rape and date rape. And when I experienced this, I wanted to be able to have a better understanding of why this is happening on such a perpetually large basis. And I think that what is important is that still to this day, that girl who Bill was charged with, is still stuck in a fictitious victim role where she has not been able to privately or publicly claim a victory over that past BS victim mentality. And as a woman who was raped, this is what drives me and what bothers me the most. And for those of you that have seen the transcripts of the sentencing, you'll make note that letter and the fact that Bill self-represented in his sentencing. He did a very good job and referenced this letter and the soft confession that proves that what Bill's been saying all along is true, and that in fact the real perpetrator that abused this girl is still free. And this is a big deal because it's like a weird juxtaposition where in order for things to continue, it was like they were forcing him to lie, you know? And it's bizarre. It was bizarre for me to experience. So I understand how a lot of people are feeling. And all I can say is, you know, we just had Memorial long weekend here, Vinny, in the United States. And this is the perfect time to say, you know what? Support our troops has changed. It's not what it used to be. It means getting behind people like Chelsea and Manning, who are conscientious objectors and who are standing for humanity, and people like Ethan McCord, who is basically, you know, dealing with PTSD, being pushed ridiculous amounts of pharmaceuticals, and, you know, is having to deal with the events of collateral murder, which he was in. He is the gentleman that you see in the Chelsea Manning video that she released through WikiLeaks, collateral murder. You can see Ethan McCord. Support the troops means it's time to get out of the comfort zone. And the reality is that Bill was carefully created as an operator, and he came forward to say, you know, the United States has been in the murder business. And that is what they don't want. They don't want the American people to have to face the realities of defense contracts and drones. And, you know, they want to be able to, like, navigate. And I tagged you in last week an article about the New Zealand, I think, I can't remember who it was, but basically one of the prominent political persons in New Zealand being pro-drone. I don't know if you got a chance to see that, Vinny, but, you know, this is...
Yeah, the Prime Minister, John Key, just says, ah, so what if we killed a New Zealander with a drone in Yemen? It's justified.
Yeah.
You know, it's the same thing everywhere you look. Ava Moore, ladies and gentlemen, Ava, where can people find more information about Bill and your radio show?
Yeah, thank you, Vinny. Okay, so if you would like to keep up to date, if you go to BillEva9.com, so B-I-L-L-E-V-A, the number 9.com, you can keep up to date on what's going on with Bill. If you are interested in supporting Bill's vision towards a hydroxy generator partnered with an over-unity motor, please, you know, we are looking for financial support for proof of concept. And this is something, you know, I mean, my gosh, the man was doing work in solitary confinement. There's nothing going to stop him. You know, so our lives are dedicated towards this, and any help is much appreciated. That is also available. The link to donate is on BillEva9.com. And my radio show is Evolutions. It's on Revolution Radio on Sunday evenings at 7 Pacific. And the website for Revolution Radio is freedomslips.com. And that's Sundays at 7 Pacific, 7 p.m. Pacific. So thank you for having me and being able to share this. I know that there's so much going on now. It's easy to forget about Bill, but there are a number of people who deserve to be regularly remembered and thought of, if nothing more.
Remember all the renters and parents out there, you know what happens when you ignore your bills. Okay, Ava, thank you very much for your time, and we will see you after the break. Ladies and gentlemen, don't you go anywhere. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinny Eastwood Show, broadcasting from the wonderfully chemtrailed, shall we say, Cayman Islands of the South Pacific. It's New Zealand, ladies and gentlemen, where it's so corrupt that even the people who are charged with investigating corruption are also corrupt. And so naturally, no corruption gets reported, and we're widely known as the least corrupt country on earth. I love that. My very special guest today is Brian McCarthy, and I noticed him laying down comments on a chemtrail debate that we were having on Facebook there, and these pituitary, extremely, well, it seems that they're, have you ever done a caricature of yourself, you know, like totally accentuated everything that was bad about your personality for all the world to see? It was like that. And there was a whole cacophony of them. I had to block multiple scumbags. And then Brian comes in and he starts laying out exactly what all of these people are saying, how they're saying it, why they're saying it, and why it's so frickin' rehearsed that he can practically predict what they're going to say next. Brian McCarthy, welcome to the program.
Hey, nice to meet you, Vinny.
Can you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Yeah, I'm a musician. I'm a composer. And a performer, composer, but trying to lean towards the composer side more. Been doing music all my life, basically. So I'm not a scientist or anything like that. I've just become very interested in this issue because, like everybody else who's got a brainstem, I've looked up and noticed the sky has changed quite a bit. And not just recently either. I mean, this has been going on for years. And I've noticed that whenever I went online and commented on any of these videos, and I'd see videos from all different countries, that I would immediately be attacked. And it was always the same attacks. You don't understand science. This is just normal water vapor trails. You must be a kook, tinfoil hat, conspiracy theorist, you know, et cetera, et cetera. And would be happened so quickly, and I was just like, wait, that's why I was able to help you so easily on your Facebook page, because now when I see that happening, I alert people to it right away, because I'm aware it's not just somebody that's a lot of times it's not just somebody online, it's definitely somebody being paid to monitor these type of sites to create confusion, in my opinion. I mean, yes, there are people that probably believe that too. But with the speed of which they respond to it makes me think that it's definitely being organized at some level, for sure.
Well, when you can tell that something's being organized, it usually has certain signs. and is often predictable because they'll have a similar pattern, track record, etc., and you'll see it all over the place. And once you recognize a pattern, you can come about ways of dismantling the plan and the activity. And I believe this is kind of what you've done, or at least to a starting degree. I don't know how prominent you are over the web in terms of talking about this kind of behavior and how to deal with it.
It's funny. All I do, and I think I've opened up a lot of people's eyes to this by just using common sense. A lot of people get browbeat. They get told that, you don't understand science. And if this was really happening, the TV set would be telling us, you know? Well, first of all, any operation like this, when you see these trails out, I've traveled all over the world and I see them everywhere. And if you go on YouTube, you'll see there's people from all over the United States, from where you're from, New Zealand, Europe, everywhere, with these long persistent trails in the sky. And everybody sees them. And a lot of people have noticed, wait a minute, what's going on here? And it's very simple to me to explain it as something that's not normal, because when you're driving in your car on a cold day, you don't leave a long trail of water vapor behind your car that lasts forever. And if you do, try telling the policeman that it's just normal water vapor. I mean, he's going to give you a ticket. He's going to say, hey, get your car fixed. So this whole story that, there's nothing to worry about it. These planes are just leaving normal water vapor in the sky. That just is so, from a common sense viewpoint, it's impossible. It's not true. And right away when I noticed that everybody was saying that to me, when I would say, wow, look at this. Oh, you don't know what you're talking about. It's just water vapor. I thought, hey, this is, there's something going on here. And that's what made me investigate it more. And when I noticed that other people who were talking about it had the same attacks made on them by similar type people who seemed to be right away at, you know, coming online, I thought, you know what, I'm gonna make a little point of helping these people out who are trying to get this issue noticed more. And so that's how I got involved with this, because I care about it. I don't make any money by talking about it. I'm a musician, right? So why should I care about what planes are doing in the sky? Well, I care because what these planes are doing is they're blocking the sun. It's obviously changing the weather. It's obviously not natural. It's not water vapor. If it was water vapor, we couldn't even drive our cars in the wintertime, because what they're telling us is that, this is just water vapor being formed by these engines exhaust hitting the cold air up in the sky. Well, if that was true, nobody could drive their car in the winter, because everybody would be leaving persistent trails and we'd all be like, wow, I can't see, there's just haze everywhere. And that's not what happens. It's the same with when you exhale on a winter's day. You don't leave a persistent trail coming out of when you exhale. There's a little bit of a cloud and then it dissipates. So right there,
unless you're in Colorado fresh after legalization. In that case, it takes quite a while for the cloud to dissipate.
So it's obviously not water vapor. And the fact that all these people seem to be consistently bent on saying that it is showed me that there's something going on here that is being hidden from us. And that made me concerned, and that's why I care about it. Because, hey, you can avoid GMO food to some degree. You can avoid a lot of things, but you can't avoid the air. You can't avoid breathing. And if they're spraying chemicals or aerosol particulates, whatever they're putting up there, we're all breathing it in and it's affecting our health. And I think that can be proved. You can see that there's a rise in lung related diseases, asthma. There's all these animal die-offs taking place. The weather is obviously getting very, very affected. And they're trying to blame it all on climate change. We've got to reduce climate emissions and all that. Well, I hear all these people talking about carbon emissions, but I don't see anybody talking about all this pollution coming out of these planes. So to me, at the very least, even if you don't believe there's anything wrong and that this is just normal, at least you should be upset that whatever these planes are doing seems to be polluting the air in a very drastic way. And so if you're concerned about the environment and you're concerned about carbon emissions, why aren't you concerned about all the pollution coming from these planes?
Hey, yeah. And why aren't you concerned about, even if it was steam, why wouldn't you be concerned about the fact that it blocks out the sun? All right. Don't you think that sun, vitamin D, and all of those things are really important for people's health? And it's like, you come to the conclusion that real environmentalism has been frickin' hijacked by this climate change mob of gangsters funded by, what's his name, George Soros, I think.
Well, there's a bunch of people funding it. You know, people got to understand that the bankers, pretty much, the international bankers run the world. That's what the New World Order is about. It's about creating a global system that they control, banking system. And so, you know, if you control, it's just like Nathan Rothschild said a long time ago, let me control a nation's currency and I don't care who makes its laws. So the bank, everything starts from the banking. But it isn't just the bankers. It's, you know, you've got to have the military involved. Money needs to be backed by something. In the case of the American dollar, it's backed by oil sales. And I really believe what we're dealing with here is not global warming. We're dealing with an attempt to control the weather. Because anybody that just looks up at the sky can see that when these planes start spraying, they can turn a sunny blue sky day into a cloudy, overcast, cool, chilly day in an hour, 2-3 hours sometimes. And that affects, so they are changing the weather. And they're affecting the weather a lot more than some guy driving his little Prius down the road or his Hummer or whatever car he's in.
Incidentally, the Prius that is made of lithium batteries, which they have to carve out large quantities of Canadian forest breathing room in order to extract that stuff, not to mention it gives off a whole lot of electromagnetic radiation, which gives you cancer. That'll teach you for trying to save the environment, you schlub.
First of all, there's no, you know what, here's the thing. I'm not against technology. I'm for technology. Look at, I mean, I wouldn't be able to talk to you today if we didn't have Skype and computers. And I love technology. I'm a musician. I love the fact that I can sit down and do a whole scenario of music.
In the same boat with you there, mate.
Yeah, I love it. But it's what we're not against here is the technology. We're against the use of the technology. And I think what we're seeing here is, I don't know if you ever heard of the word the phrase disaster capitalism, Vinny?
Yeah, basically you just cause a big crisis, and then as soon as everybody's share prices tumble, you just buy them all up for pennies on the dollar, and then you can buy entire countries pretty much overnight.
Exactly. And if you can control the weather, think of what you could do. You could create storms. You could create hurricanes, typhoons, tsunamis.
Droughts.
Droughts. You could deny people the moisture they need.
And hey, and if nobody got no water, guess who's going to be living there? Nobody.
And you know, Monsanto is just coming out with their drought-resistant seeds. And how convenient for California. They're being droughted out, and they're the 50% of America's organic food comes from California.
Is that just after the aluminium-resistant seeds that they brought out?
Oh, yeah, they did the aluminum seeds, resistant seeds in 2010.
I can guarantee you they're going to have barium-resistant seeds, sure. Strontium-resistant seeds, Republican-resistant seeds, you know, any kind of thing you want.
Well, the thing is, you know, with Monsanto, with all these with the spraying and the weather modification, anytime the military does something, they never do it just for one reason. So, sure, there might be, they might have looked at the data and said, you know, we've got a little bit of a warming problem here. We might want to modify the weather and get, you know, but that's not going to be the only reason they're going to do a major operation like this. There's a lot of benefits to controlling the weather. The weather is an incredible weapon as well. And one of the things, I'll just give you an example that I noticed. Remember all the typhoons that happened in the Philippines? There were 3 typhoons in a row in October 2013. Well, if you look at 2 months before that happened, there was an oil discovery made in the city is called Cebu, C-E-B-U. You can Google this and see it for yourself. But they discovered these vast oil reserves in Cebu, in the Philippines. 2 months later, three typhoons come through and completely wipe out that exact area, one after another. Now, a coincidence theorist will say, oh, you know, that's horrible luck, and oh my God, three typhoons in the same area, and that's just incredible. But a conspiracy theorist, somebody who can connect dots, will say, well, wait a minute. You know, they discovered all this oil in this very crowded area. And instead of going there and trying to figure out how to negotiate and get the rights to do it, hey, orchestrate a couple of big weather storms, wipe out the area, and then we can come in as humanitarians. And when you look at who was providing humanitarian aid, you've got the Red Cross, you've got Halliburton, Chevron. I mean, what a coincidence.
And incidentally, they were all locked and stocked and prepared with all, they were all locked and stocked and prepared with those supplies just after the typhoon hit.
Isn't that a coincidence?
And they take months. It takes like a month to prepare a ship full of supplies, for frack's sake.
It's just such an amazing coincidence that that storm hit right where they discovered oil a couple months earlier. I mean, of course, if you see a connection there, you're just a kook, you know. You're just a wacko, and don't even, you know, you're put on your tinfoil hat and yada yada, you know. So this happens again and again and again, where you see that these weather events seem to take place in places where there are large oil deposits that are found. I'll give you another example. In Germany, they've had a hard time getting, you know, Monsanto basically closed down their German operations last summer. And the head of the German base of Monsanto, said, we're getting out of Germany. It's too hard here. There's too many regulations. We're going to go to countries where we can deal with the country's government without all these regulations. Well, 4 days later, there's this gigantic, almost historic flooding that took place in eastern Germany, northern Austria, the Czech Republic, you know, Prague. And most of the areas that were flooded were farm areas. Now, again, you could say that's a coincidence, but it seems like Europe and this area that's had resisting GMO foods, and then all of a sudden there's a horrible storm that wipes out a lot of their farm area. And right after Monsanto said, yeah, we're going to go, you guys are too tough, and they leave, and then a big storm hits the whole area and wipes out a lot of the farmland and floods the area. So, I mean, this happens again and again and again and again. And you can say, well, it's just one big coincidence after coincidence. But when you see these planes changing the weather with these sprays, and you know that this technology, I mean, they used it in the Vietnam War. They were experimenting with cloud seeding back in the 40s and the 50s. So you know they have the ability to change the weather, to cause storms, to cause droughts. And so to me, you're living in la-la land if you don't think that clever, intelligent people in banking and Monsanto, the military, wouldn't get together and go, hey, let's make some money. And it's the ultimate weapon, because a lot of people think that only God controls the weather. And only God can do that. So they can attack, they can destroy an area, and then they can come in and say, oh, isn't that terrible? And they can buy up that land for pennies on the dollar. Or they can get at the resources that they want to get at without having to deal with the people. And I really think that's what we're seeing here. We're seeing weather modification being used for profit and as a weapon. It's not a pretty sight. A lot of people don't want to believe that. But I really think that's what we're seeing. And I think that's why the secret is that why there's so many people being paid to troll these websites and to poo-poo the idea that it's happening. Because if it was just for global warming, Vinny, why not just admit to it? Why not just say, you know, climate change is so bad, we're going to spray the atmosphere. We've got to block a little bit of the sun because global warming and climate change is such a bad thing.
I love it how at the same time as these trolls deny all of these things go on, the climate change movement is releasing video and campaign after video after campaign saying we need to spray the air with stuff. sulfide particles and all of this kind of stuff. Like, they're promoting doing it as they deny that it's happening.
Exactly. Well, it's kind of a weird thing. It's like they give you two scenarios. It's not happening, and you're crazy if you think it is. And then they give the smart, you know, the scientific view where this is something we might have to do. Here's what we might have to do. We might have to use jets, disperse aerosol particulates into the atmosphere, aluminum and metal oxides to reflect some of the sun's rays. But we shouldn't do it. Only if climate change gets really, really bad. And then all we hear from people in the media is that climate change is causing all this bad weather and global warming and CO2. Well, first of all, Vinny, I've done a little bit of reading. And like I said, I just have to make this clear to everybody. I'm not a scientist. I'm just somebody that likes to research things and look things up. And from what I've read about CO2 is that it's heavier than air and that it sits, most CO2 is near the ground. Okay. So how could CO2 be causing global warming if CO2 is a heavier than air gas? In other words, it sinks down to the ground. What I think is going on here is that with the spraying that they're doing with all these aerosol particulates in the air, they're blocking the sun from getting into the stratosphere. Okay. Well, ozone is formed in the stratosphere from the sun's rays breaking up oxygen molecules, O2, oxygen is O2. You break the oxygen molecule into O1s, which is the atoms. The O1 atoms float around, they connect with other O2s, and you get O3, and that's ozone. But if you're blocking the sun with these artificial clouds, the sun is not interacting with that oxygen, and as a result, is not creating as much ozone as it should create. So when they stop spraying, voila, it is hot. And I've noticed that. When they don't spray, that sun is hot, okay? So it kind of is creating the global warming that they're claiming is happening from, you know, CO2 and all this other stuff. I think the real problem is the ozone layer and that the spraying is making it worse. And all I can tell you is that I've noticed, and anybody else that's been following, you know, has noticed these chemtrails and the geoengineering that's taking place, is that as the years have gone by, it's become more, the frequency has increased. There's more spraying taking place. Used to be, when I first noticed it, I lived in Las Vegas, okay? And I noticed every couple weeks, for a couple days in a row, I'd see all these planes flying back and forth. This is when I first noticed it. And I thought, whoa, what's going on here? And I thought they were just doing it in Las Vegas because it's so hot there. And I noticed I thought, oh, they're just making clouds because it's so hot. Well, then I started, you know, when I drove up to visit my family in Washington, I have friends and family that live in Washington State. I came up here and all the way up, I saw them spraying everywhere, you know, in Utah, Montana, Idaho. I was like, this is going on everywhere. That's when I started to really pay attention. That was back in 2007, 2008. And since then, I've noticed that is the spraying went from 2 or 3 days every couple of weeks to 3 or 4 days a week to almost every day. And I noticed that when they try to stop, it gets very hot very, very quickly. So I think what they're doing is the more they spray, the more they have to spray. And so they're kind of caught in a vicious circle now where if they tried to, even if they did stop, the temperatures would go up so fast because we don't have the ozone in the air that we should have. I don't know if that makes any sense.
Well, it does, it does. And, you know, people have been blaming the hole in the ozone layer on, like, CFCs from your fridges and stuff like that. It's like you could have... Yeah, you know, and what I was thinking is that, you know, what's been happening... Oh, excuse me. HARP, High Frequency Active Auroral Research Program. They got facilities all over the world, including one 15 minutes drive from Christchurch, which had a massive earthquake, two massive earthquakes, amid thousands of other shocks, of course. And they punch massive quantities, and I mean like practically a million watts of radio frequency, just bam, microwave radiation right into the atmosphere to bounce it off.
You can see it because the clouds turn into these little... they look like waves. You know, when you drop a rock into a puddle, you'll see waves go out from it. And you can see that when they're doing it. You look up at the sky, and all of a sudden, the clouds out of nowhere turn into these little, like, waves. Like, the air becomes like waves. And that makes sense, that if they are applying electromagnetic radiation into the atmosphere to heat it up, that it would be like throwing something into a puddle of water, that there would be waves going outward from where that rock hits in the water. Well, the same thing with electromagnetic radiation. If you shoot radiation up into the atmosphere to try to heat it up, there's definitely an energy source. There's a propulsion behind that. You know, if you're shooting something into the atmosphere, and the rest of the air is going to ripple away from that area. And you can see it happening when they do it. So people could say, oh, that's just normal cloud formation. And well, you know, if that's the case, I've never seen clouds form in perfect little ripples like you would see on a pond when you throw a rock into the pond.
Sometimes people are just like, they're afraid of the implications so that they don't go with their gut, you know. Brian McCarthy is my guest. You're listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. Just remember to check out the homepage and have a look at our sponsors there. Also, bear in mind, ladies and gentlemen, the listening audience provides the bulk of the funding for this little operation so that we can listen to voices from all around the world and learn a little something. So if you want to start up a monthly gifting to the show here, please go to the PayPal buttons on the homepage, or if you're in New Zealand, there's a Kiwi Bank account there. So we'll be right back after the break with more from Brian McCarthy.
Unforgettable. That's what you are. Unforgettable.
And we're back here today with Brian McCarthy, and we're talking about chemtrails and also getting into some of the techniques and tactics used by paid, alleged chemtrail trolls that deny that this stuff is even going on, whilst at the same time as trying to promote it as a way of preventing climate change, which it's allegedly causing. Anyway, have you noticed that whenever somebody's lying to you, nothing that they say seems to add up?
Yeah, exactly. Well, and you have to also remember, too, with the deniers, they're making a lot of money off manipulating the weather, controlling the weather. And they want people to think that this is being caused by their activity. In other words, they want you to feel guilty. And what I think is going on here is that we are dealing with we're not running out of oil. What's happening is we're running out of the easy to get. It's getting more expensive for them to get oil and natural gas. That's why they're engaged in fracking, offshore oil drilling, where they're drilling deep, deep down. You know, back when you and I were younger, there was a lot more oil near the surface. It was cheaper to get, easier to get. Well, now we have more people, more demand. We have the economies of China and India coming online. And the oil is further down. We have to drill deeper and farther down to get it. And I think one of the things that's going on with this climate change is that they're trying to convince people to become used to using less energy, to blame the weather on them. In other words, all this bad weather that's happening, it's because you're using too much heat or air conditioning in your home. You're driving your car too much. Because they know they can't keep the system going with 7, 8, 9 billion people using the same amount of energy that they were using when they had, you know, had 4 or 5 billion or 3 billion people in the past. And so the elites don't want to lose their standard of living. They want to maintain, you know, their hotels and their airports and their homes. And they, you know, Al Gore wants to have his refrigerators and, you know, to be able to fly in his private jets. But they know that if everybody has this access to petroleum and that the whole economy is based on petroleum and petroleum products, that it's going to crash. So I think they're trying to talk people into the whole climate change argument based on that, well, it's because you're using too much oil, and so you're going to have to get used to paying more for your oil, carbon tax and all that, and look at what it's doing to the weather. It's wrecking the weather, when really they're the ones manipulating the weather. It's kind of a Wizard of Oz trick. They're creating the bad weather. They're blaming it on our consumption. Okay. And I'm not believing it. Look, I'm not saying that human beings aren't polluting the planet. Anybody can see, if you look back in the old pictures of L.A., there was smog over L.A., there was smog in New York. But what I think happened is when they tried to clear up the smog, they realized that the ozone layer had been damaged by all the smog and that there was a warming problem. And they didn't want the system to stop. The system is based on growth. They've got to keep making profit. They need more people to buy more stuff. The money's based on debt. Bankers need to keep loaning money to people. So how do you keep a system going when you're running out of the easy-to-get oil that the whole system is based on? Well, you have to convince them that they've got to pay a lot more for less. And I think that's why there is such a secrecy around this, because if people realize the weather is being manipulated by the military, and that there's being, that the prop, you know, just think of the heads that would roll. And if people realize all the profit is being made by using the weather as a weapon to blast out an area so that they can go in there, buy up the land for pennies on the dollar, and then they can offshore drill, they can buy up the land the farmers couldn't grow their crops on, you don't want to grow crops here? You can't grow crops here? Here's our drought-resistant seeds, California. And by the way, speaking of California, last year, I don't know if your listeners in New Zealand are aware of this or in other countries, but last year, California had an initiative where they tried to make GMO food, foods that use GMOs, be labeled. And they hired, the Monsanto people hired all these spokespeople to come out and say that it would cost way too much and it wasn't necessary. And GMO food is substantially equivalent to organic. And they defeated the measure. And now, ever since that measure was introduced, California has been absolutely droughted out. And they are in a serious problem. They're having a hard time. The farmers are wondering how they're going to grow crops this year. And so you got to wonder, once again, if they're using these weather modification tools, HARP, chemtrails, to deny that moisture to California, almost as a kind of a punishment. You guys want to label your food and you want to try to push us out? Guess what? You don't get any water this year. And let's see you try to grow your organic crops with no rain. I mean, that's what I'm seeing. And again, it could just be a giant coincidence, but I don't think so.
Well, it stands to reason that if Monsanto and the New World Order would have official spokespeople that would go in front of the cameras and everything like that, and if they're making a lot of money, why wouldn't they have a whole army of unofficial spokespeople who you don't even know work for the company who are pushing for them behind the scenes and trolling all over the internet and stuff? Why wouldn't they?
Exactly. Just like you noticed on your Facebook page, when you tried to talk about it, you were instantly confronted with people that were just, the thing is they don't talk, they don't debunk what you're saying scientifically. They name call.
Here's one thing. I did this post and it had like about, 12 ingredients of chemtrails or something of that nature and describing what they do, blah, 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 blah. And my friend CK, who's a denier, has this one reply to it, and it's a one-word reply, and it totally debunks everything I was saying. Science.
Well, again,
And another guy, who's a radio show host here in New Zealand, who has probably a pitiful radio show compared to mine, also has a one word reply. Oh, well, two word reply. Water vapor.
Well, again, you know, if these were just water vapor clouds, they would dissipate quickly. And we've got to reemphasize the point that any engine that is leaving a persistent trail of material in the air is not functioning properly. And that if water vapor trails persisted, we could have no cars driving in the wintertime. The whole freeway, all the freeways and highways would just be inundated with haze.
Now, we've already gone
to drive anywhere.
I know we've already covered this. Now I wanted to go into what are the other techniques and things of this nature that they're using, because there's actually quite a bit, and they throw scientific document papers or something at you, like they say, here, read this, and it's like 700 page scientific document paper about like chemtrails. It's just, you know, if they understood it themselves, they could explain it in a few sentences, but they don't. They try to put a whole bunch of stuff in you to make you feel guilty for not reading the other side of the argument, because it's just too long and boring and it doesn't make any sense anyway, because I've tried to read through these things. None of them have any relevance to the subject at hand, and it's kind of like a look over here, like a distraction to try and waste your time.
Well, it's, you know, there's a thing you can Google on, I think it's called the Welsbach patent. And that describes exactly what we're seeing now with these aerosols, where they talk about using aluminum, barium, metal oxides to reflect sunlight particles for solar radiation management. Chemtrails is a really bad word to use, because it's been thrown out and there's been so much negative disinformation attached to it. The better phrases are geoengineering, solar radiation management. Those terms, if you Google those terms, you'll find the Welsbach patent. You will see that there are people like David Keith, Ken Caldera, that are talking about it, albeit in the future sense. And then you'll find guys like Dane Wigington, who, in my opinion, he's one of my heroes, because he's one of the few people that is really talking about this in a truthful way and is really promoting the fact that, hey, look, folks, you're concerned about carbon emissions and pollution, but why not? Why are they not talking about this? And that's all I would ask. I think that I'm all for reducing emissions from engines. I'm all for, anything that'll make the environment better. I'm all for getting away from oil and gas and using more, you know, cleaner energies, if we can, whenever possible. But let's talk, if we're going to be honest about environmentalism, then why are these people not talking about the pollution? Forget the weather modification and HARP and all that. Anybody, I think, could look up at the sky and say, wow, there is a lot of pollution coming out of these jets. And I think that's the way to get people into facing what's going on and to debunk the debunkers. The people who say you're crazy, you don't know what's going on. Obviously, there is something going on. And one of the things I do also, when you encounter, and I would tell everybody to do this, when you're trying to discuss this subject with other people and inform other people, you're going to encounter these people that will right away call you a kook and a tinfoil hat and a nut. And they'll, like you say, throw a 700-page report, you know, that is, nobody's going to read a 700-page report that probably doesn't have anything to do with the subject anyway. And what I do is I just block those people. I block them. I refute their claims. And that way, instead of having a long thread where they're calling me names and I'm saying they don't know what they're talking about, to me, there's no more argument about this. The proof is overwhelming. There's visual evidence. You can see, this is one conspiracy you can see with your own two eyes. You can look up and go, wow, there was a blue sky at 8 o'clock in the morning. And now 75 jets later, there isn't a blue sky. And anybody that's over 35 knows that's not normal. That's not the way it used to be. Here's another one you can debunk. A lot of people say, well, you just live near an airport. That's why you're seeing all those jets. And I live in Spokane, Washington, right now, currently. And we're near an Air Force base here. And we've got an airport in this town. But anybody knows that with any airport, the plane starts coming down 30 to 45 minutes before it lands. And a lot of these jets that you see doing the spraying are way, way up. So I live a few miles from an airport. There's no way those are passenger jets. They're too small. They're unmarked. They're flying in all different directions. And if they were passenger jets, they should be much, much lower because they're very near the airport and they should be coming down to land. So, I mean, there's so many, it's so many reasons that this is happening. It's so obvious. There's so much evidence. My plea to people would be to not argue with these people anymore. We need to reach out to people that are don't know this is happening, but are open-minded, that are or the people that see it happening and go, that's kind of strange. The people that are against it are, in my opinion, there's two kinds of people that are still don't think this is happening. They're either shills or they're people that are cognitive dissonance. They cannot, they just don't want to deal with it. They're like, no. You know, the same kind of mindset you're dealing with people that don't want to believe anything as far as 9/11 goes, or they don't want to believe that fluoride is bad for you, or, you know, there's a lot of people that just, it's too much for them. They have all they can handle with their kids and their job. And then you come along and tell them that there's this geoengineering thing going on and they just shut down. They go, oh, you know. So once again, I think we have to not argue. We have to realize that a lot of people don't want to know about it and that we don't need everybody to know about this. And that's how I deal with it. And so that's what I was telling you when we were talking on Facebook, is that just block these people. Talk to the people who are open to it. The more people we get aware of this happening, the more there's a chance we can at least get them to reduce these operations.
Well, you know what this reminds me of? One time I was invited to join the New Zealand Journalists Association on Facebook. It's a Facebook page with about 1,300 members or so, all of which pretty much are New Zealand media people, mainstream media people, to most of them. And I'd post up questions like, what is the formula for investigating conspiracy or anything like that? And you get these angry replies, this abuse and everything. It's like in clear violation of all the rules of the group. And they kick me from the group for causing too much. it's just basically people don't want to hear about it, all right? Nobody wants to hear about it. I never wanted to hear about it in the first place, but after a while, it gets to the point where you can't not hear about it.
You can't ignore
it. Yeah.
You can't. Well, look, like I said, you think I want to be talking about this stuff? I'm a musician. I would much rather just be working on music and happy. But, I mean, when you see this going on and it becomes very obvious that something is not right, as a normal human being, you want to tell other people, go, hey, do you see this happening? One of the things, I got to bring this up. I encounter this term conspiracy theorist, and I want to tell anybody who's listening to me right now, human beings do nothing but conspire, okay? It is a miracle, and it's a brilliant stroke of brainwashing and propaganda that the elites were able to convince people that conspiracy theories, you know, if you believe in a conspiracy, you're crazy. Human beings do nothing but conspire. Businessmen conspire to make more money. Sports teams conspire together how they're going to win the game. You know, they've got the coach and the players. The military conspires how they're going to win a battle, how they can create this new weapon that'll, you know, it'll be unstoppable by the enemy, the other side. And on and on. Even musicians conspire. We get together and we practice and rehearse, and you're going to play this and I'm going to play. That's what human beings do. We're great at conspiring. So a conspiracy theorist is just somebody who's trying to connect the dots. But what happened is after JFK died, anybody that didn't buy the story that Oswald acted alone was a conspiracy theorist, because a conspiracy implied that more than one person is involved. And they had to have people thinking that only Oswald shot Kennedy, which is obviously not true, because Oswald was behind Kennedy and Kennedy got shot in the front. So there's no way that I know of for somebody to shoot somebody from the back and hit him in the front of the head. So that was a term they came up with to debunk anybody that said, hey, wait a minute, you know, maybe there was more than one person involved with JFK. Oh, you're a conspiracy theorist. And it's been very, very effective at silencing any argument. When you think about it, even the official story of 9/11 is a conspiracy theory. Now, that being said, human beings do nothing but conspire, blah, 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 right? But that doesn't mean that all conspiracies are true. So there's both sides to this coin. A lot of people I hear talking about conspiracies are just way out in left field. They don't have anything to back up what they say. They speculate. And the government uses conspiracy theories to explain things. For example, 9/11, I mean, if that isn't a kooky conspiracy theory, I don't know what is. So the fact that you come up with a conspiracy theory doesn't mean that it's true or false. Just like technology can be used for good or bad purposes. But to call somebody a conspiracy theorist and that somehow makes them a bad person, to me, is just ludicrous. All detectives are conspiracy theorists, CSI people. So the word has been used to make people feel ashamed. And I can't tell you how many times I hear people say, well, I'm not a conspiracy theorist, but, you know, and say what you want to say, use the evidence to support it, and, you know, human beings do conspire. If you read history, you'll see that. And does that mean that all conspiracies are true? No, it does not. Does that mean that all conspiracies succeed? Of course not. Many of them fail. But does that mean that nobody ever conspires and that everything is just happening? That's ludicrous. People who are rich and powerful do not just sit back and react to events. They create the event they want to happen. Problem, reaction, solution. They know how to control the situation so that they can benefit off of the end result. And they're not sitting back and reacting to everything. And most people have a trouble accepting that, because most people are in reactive mode. Most people are just getting up, going to work, and then, oh my God, something happened, and they just react. So they have a hard time understanding that men with power and influence get together with other men with power and influence and say, hey, you know, if we do this and we do that, you can benefit and so can I. Hey, let's do it. You know, they don't want to believe that. And we've got to get over that mentality. We've got to break that phrase, conspiracy theorist. What I use is when people don't want to believe in conspiracy theorists, I call them a coincidence theorist.
It's funny, you know, the telescope was invented by 9 guys on the same night, different sides of the Earth. They never knew each other, right? And also the story goes. Well, my friend Barry, who donates me petrol vouchers every now and again, that he gets sent for free because of his credit card or something. I don't know exactly what it is, but he gives me like $100 worth of fuel vouchers every couple of months. It's really handy. And he came up with that independently of you. Talking about coincidence theorist and conspiracy theorist, you know, a whole lot of other people have come up with reality analyst and any bunch of names. Personally, I like the term conspiracy theorist, and I'm proud to be called one, because it means, of course, I'm not a coincidence theorist, which is basically the most naive and insane person you could possibly be.
Let's debunk this one, too. One of the things people who don't believe in conspiracies will say is that, well, if it was really true, nobody could keep a secret like this. If 9/11, let's say if 9/11 was really done by people in, you know, in factions of our government or in the military or whatever, They wouldn't be able to keep this type of a secret. Somebody would have talked. Well, first of all, many times people do talk, and they get labeled conspiracy theorists.
Or killed in really old, innocent-looking accidents, right. Like hanging themselves and trying to struggle to get free.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Or like having a stress heart attack while you're relaxing in your frickin' jacuzzi.
I mean, the other thing about it is that people don't understand how most corporations work with the pyramid model, you know, and military as well. There's only a small people at the top who understand what's really going on. And then everything is compartmentalized. So like, say, for example, with the geoengineering we're seeing, people say, well, why aren't the pilots coming forward and telling you, why isn't somebody? Well, there are a few that have tried to come forward. But the main reason that there aren't more people coming forward is because you've got one group of people probably that builds the planes. You've got maybe one company that builds the nozzles. You might have another group of people that are in charge of the drone operation. Because a lot of these planes that are spraying these chemtrails are drones. You can tell. They're little white, tiny little planes. They're not pilots. They're drones. It's the I found this out, you know, 6-7 years ago when I lived in Las Vegas, that I knew people that went to work in Nellis Air Force Base, went into a nice air-conditioned room, sat down in front of a computer, and operated drones in Iraq. So, you know, the fact that, well, why aren't these pilots coming forward and talking about this? This is how they keep secrets. So what I'm trying to say here is they can keep secrets. And compartmentalization is one way they do it. The other way they do it is, as we just mentioned, is intimidation. The people who are close to the top of the pyramid who know what's going on, they know if they come forward and try to talk, they'll have a little accident. They might fall off the top of a, you know, from a nine-story, from the ninth floor of a hotel or something.
Or might accidentally get shot in the head with a nail gun 6 times in both
might
sides of the head.
Might shoot themselves in the head a couple of times and leave a note and say, you know, I'm doing this for the children, you know.
The note that was written after he shot himself in the head
exactly.
6 times, of course.
And this is how the mafia did it, too. It's like people in the old days have to remember that say, oh, there's no conspiracies, right? Well, in the old days, that's what Al Capone used to say. He'd say, well, Al, people say you're in organized crime. What do you have to say to that? He'd say, ah, there's no mafia. That's a conspiracy. That's ridiculous. So for a long time, that was the way they hid the mafia, was they said, there is no mafia. Look at what they do now. I mean, you can go on YouTube and watch documentaries of all the different guys that were in the mob and who they killed and what they did. So obviously, people do conspire. And so, and they are able to keep secrets. And just because you, when you go to work, you know, people say, well, when I go to work, nobody keeps a secret in my office. You know, people are basing their own experience with their families or their workers at the office. And they're using that again as a basis of, well, see, everybody I know, nobody keeps a secret. So how could they keep a secret with chemtrails or 9/11?
Not to mention, how would you know? Are you telling me that you know all the secrets of everybody you've ever met? Is that what you're telling me? Are you telling me that when somebody gets hired at KFC, they get on the first day of the job given the colonel's secret recipe? Now you're part of the club, son. Your very first day on the job, we're giving you no training whatsoever. Here's the most guarded secret of the entire thing, which only the CEO and everything else are supposed to know. But really, we tell everybody about it and that kind of thing. And it's like, oh, well, they couldn't keep a secret if it was that widely spread, would they? You know what the secret ingredient is? It's frickin' MSG.
Three words need to know. Anybody that knows, anybody in the military knows that when you're in the military, you're on a need-to-know basis with everything. That's how they compartmentalize it. You know, you work on one part of an operation, and that's it. Mm-hmm. You don't get told why you're doing it. You don't, you know, some guy doesn't come in and sit down with the guy building these drones and say, okay, here's what we're going to use the drones for. We're going to be going here. And you know, Dick Cheney doesn't walk in and say, okay, now let's all talk here. Like you said, you just get told what you're going to do, you do it, and that's it. Need to know. Yeah. And if you try to ask a soldier, you don't need to know. Just, you know, or
And if you keep asking questions consistently, you'll soon find yourself pulling duty on a radar station in Alaska somewhere. You listen to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. My very special guest is Brian McCarthy. Remember to check out the website, thevinnieeastwoodshow.com. There's Vinnie with a Y because it's the most important question. And Eastwood as in go ahead, make my news. We'll be right back. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to yet another exciting episode of the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting from New Zealand, the fabulous, the fluoridated, the Fukushima irradiated, the incredibly corrupt, and goodness knows it's green and clean, except for the political system. Although it is green sometimes, it's certainly not clean. My very special guest today is a specialist in the, general scumbaggery of the New Zealand ilk, might I say. The postmaster at the Deadline Gazette, Ben Vidgen.
Good afternoon, Vinny. That's Ben Vidgen speaking to you from Otago, where the beautiful people are.
It sounds like you're speaking in a Transylvanian accent. Is that some kind of like Otagoan dialect?
It's just what we do when we've had a few beers the night beforehand.
It does happen, actually. Sensitivity to sunlight.
I've definitely got a lot of that today.
Yeah. And also, churches don't seem fond of you coming into them, you know. It's interesting.
Well, churches just don't seem fond of me, full stop. In fact, mind you, there's a lot of people that are out there that don't seem fond of me, but, you know, it's what you get. It happens when you rattle cages.
Yeah, well, it's what you get when you don't compromise who you are in order to make everybody else feel comfortable with their stupid little lives that they've built up around themselves for decades and decades without even thinking about what it means.
Well, it's quite interesting. Like, the other day I was walking down the main street of Dunedin, which is Princess Street, and I had about four or five of my long-term clients have been advertising me for about 11 years. And, you know, the general theme of the conversation was, look, Ben, you know, you polarise a lot of people, and you know you're not the most diplomatic person out there. But we like you because you actually, you know, you walk the talk, and you don't care what people think about you. And I don't. You know, I've been doing my paper down here in Otago for 11 years. Many have come, many have gone. I'm still here. I'm doing my own thing, and I'm not changing.
Well, you know, you can't argue with what works.
No, well, you can't. And it's amazing how many, like, you know, the big boys out there see what I'm doing and think, oh, we want that advertising, we want it all. And they try and duplicate it, but they never quite understand it. You know, it's like, if I looked at what my hourly rate was, I'd scare myself stupid. You know, I don't run an office cost. I don't run a big staffing, so I can get away with what I'm doing. So that's why I'm still here. But these other ventures keep on wanting to, you know, the big flash cars and the big office, and they just don't work it out. That's, you know, not the way to survive in this day and time.
Well, not if you're telling the truth anyway. If you want to BS people and commit fraud and everything like that and crime, mate, you'll be riches beyond the wildest dreams. But if you want to be honest, ethical and what have you, it basically comes down to the amount of hard work and integrity you put into it.
Pretty much all. And that's, you know, that's at the end of the day why I survive, because I, you know, I may not necessarily say anything that people agree, but I have my own code of ethics, and I stick to it, and 11 years later I haven't changed it, and people know that they can consistently rely on what I'm doing. You know, it's, I mean, financially, yeah, I mean, we've got things like the stadium project down here, which was one of these things which I wrote about and said, don't do it, it's a huge white elephant, it's going to cost you hundreds of millions of dollars. We were told by all the people in suits that, oh no, we were just the riffraff and we didn't know what we're talking about, and they were rich and powerful, so we should listen to them. And I built the stadium, $500 million later, and we're paying for it, and we're paying for it, and we're paying for it. And, you know, I've been proved correct, but in the meantime, I've had all my advertising with the council axed because they perceived my stance to be anti-council when all I was doing was my job, whereas other larger papers have turned around and basically told the people of Dunedin that this is a great thing and got all that council money. And, you know, 10 years later, now the facts of the roosters have come home, but they're still getting their advertising.
Is it always this way, or more to the point, has it always been this way with advertising revenue and what have you? Because I've only really just started picking up advertisers just recently to any extent, and I'm doing no contracts or anything like that. These are just good people who support what I do and basically want to give me a bit of money but aren't prepared to just donate it for absolutely nothing.
Well, you know, I mean, you know, it's an interesting thing from a journalist viewpoint. When I started my paper 11 years ago, I had the opinion that journalists are most important and advertising was like the advertising, schm advertising. 11 years later, I realized that, you know, for my paper to survive, my advertising actually has to actually work. But then you get down to the issue of what's your editorial stance. And the conventional view on television, on radio, and other print media is that don't do anything controversial because it'll scare away the advertisers and you can't survive. But well, it's actually not the case. You know, we've got, I have lawyers, I have top market art galleries, top market restaurants, cafes. They've all been advertising for me for 11 years. Nobody's not come into their store and said, well, we won't do business with you because you appear in the Postman. In fact, they just recognize that I've got a good, strong brand that's picked up and recognized and people like what I'm saying. I never have any copies left of my publication when I go and do my next issue because, again, it gets picked up. So the living proof that you can actually treat people intelligently and it will actually work. The tricky thing is, you know, there are the status quo, the people such that run the council, the people that want to support things like the stadium, which costs our city, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars. Those people, I can't get their advertising revenue because I get in the way of doing what they want to do mostly, which is rip off the rest of the people in Dunedin and but go, we're in suits, so we must be respectable. You always have to make a choice. Like, if you could put up, I mean, there was another publication in Dunedin that came along. It was based on exactly my format. They were doing everything that I was doing, except for they were took the attitude of they took away the politics and they just showed students with their bums on the front page that this would be cool because that's what people wanted to hear. Well, that publication lasted 8 months before it fell over. I mean, they had a bigger budget than me and the rest of it, but at the end of the day, people didn't want their product associated with crap, you know? So draw your own conclusions.
Yeah. I mean, I can probably make the same argument just for my my YouTube channel and video presence. I mean, 5 years, 5,000 videos, and I've got 14,000 subscribers. The New Zealand Herald that's been around for 10 years on YouTube that has tens of thousands of videos only has like 6,000, 7,000, 8,000 subscribers now. So yep. I'm and that's the leading mainstream media YouTube channel in New Zealand. The New Zealand Herald website is the fourth or the eighth most followed website in New Zealand overall, and I'm beating them on their YouTube channel by my frickin' self. See, it gives true testament to exactly the point you're trying to make here, Ben. People value what's freaking real well over what's manufactured and packaged and basically had all the truth and all the juicy details beaten out of it so you don't offend anybody that can think.
Well, you know, give an example. Before I come to an example, I'll say something about TV media. Is that what tends to happen when they are putting on programs for TV is that the marketing people turn around and they'll say, don't put that program on because it scares away the advertisers and that's what it's all about. Well, the reality is what they do is they take a good program and they put it on at a bad time frame, like 11 o'clock nighttime or so on, and of course there's not enough people there to watch it. So they say, see, this doesn't work. Let's go back to buying reality TV, which normally, you know, a reality program is about 1/10 the price of a documentary. So, in fact, they can do is buy 10 reality programs for the price of one documentary, put them on a prime TV, and because that's when people tend to turn on the TV, they say, this is what people actually want. It's not what people want. It's what they've done to massage the demographics to get the results that they want so that they can maximize their profit. On the other hand, they once put on a docudrama called Edge of Darkness about the nuclear it was based on sort of nuclear thriller in England. They put it on at 7 o'clock on Saturday evening, prime television, about 1995, or actually a little bit earlier than 1990. What actually happened was the series was so popular that by sheer numbers, the television station had to turn around and rerun the program because people actually were really into it. So that the purpose of that example is to show you that when you put on a good product that does actually appeal to people's intelligence and make them think, they will respond. So, you know, we often get led on, oh, people aren't into documentaries, they aren't into serious in-depth television. Well, it's not. It's the way that material is massaged for the purposes of making them be able to be put out cheap product to get the maximum return on their advertising. So they're actually selling the audience short, and ultimately they're actually selling themselves short, because even TV numbers are now going down because people are transferring instead to YouTube channels like yourself or other sources of information.
Yeah, no, they're really putting themselves out of the job, and I think that's what makes our job so much easier, is because we can just cover what they don't, which means we can cover anything, and in fact we do.
Yeah, pretty much all, and you know, and it's quite interesting. Again, I do a bit of social media. We're only really just starting to get into that role, but I find that I can sell advertising in that area very, very, very well, simply because A, I've got good content and people are interested in what I have to say. B, I've taken the time to actually understand how social media works when most of these people are still working to old school formulas. And C, just because of the fact that I understand that we're no longer in a world where it's your advertising is just based on putting out a newspaper. I mean, my publication is multimedia. We do radio. I do a show on Wednesday nights, 8:30 on 105.4 FM Otago Access Radio. The show is podcast that goes on my website. The website has my social media embedded into the website. My website is www.postmanproductions.org. It is actually down for maintenance, so it'll be up next week, so you can go and actually have a look at it. But I also turn around, I use YouTube, and I use print, and I use all these things to combine them together so that they feed off each other. The end result is I'm actually putting out a product that's got lower costs, for lower costs than a lot of these big boys are getting bigger numbers. Yet I charge a lot less, I have good content, and I retain my advertisers.
Yeah. And I think this is actually one of the important relationships that needs to be understood between mainstream print media and the new media that we're kind of running here, is that the advertisers that we take on aren't people who go with the flow all the time and are always worried about this, that, or the other ramifications. What they care about is truth, and they actually have a moral obligation to ensure that truth keeps getting out, because I think they understand, some of them at least, that without truthful media reporting and people to back those people who do it and give up their time and effort to do so, you won't be in business for very long without somebody else coming over and swiping it through fraud.
Yeah. Well, I've got about 25% of my advertisers are what I would probably actually call patrons. They're advertising with me, not necessarily because they're interested in the results, but they're advertising me because they like what I'm doing. And when they look around what their options are, they see that they're giving money to media that are actually, you know, not reporting on things which are actually relevant to them in terms of rates, council issues. Whereas they see that I'm actually, you know, go out there and I do the job. I actually have impact, and I'm quite often quite stunned. I mean, you know, I'm very good at setting media landmines. I can put a topic out there and then the other media guys will pick up on it. But I'm really good at rattling the cages. But I have 75% of my advertisers, however, are people that they're not advertising me because they're actually interested in the truth. What they are actually interested in is they're interested in A, my numbers, and B, they're interested in the fact that I can reach out to a whole variety of demographic. Whereas other people are turning around, like, you know, one particular group of people, they represent a consortium, which I also have interest in. This consortium, I have about 11 of their clients, which I consistently advertise for 11 years. They themselves were made up of trusts and are very tied up with the establishment. They refuse to advertise me because they say I'm not conservative enough. Now, all of their own clients are my clients because they know I get results, but they don't want to be seen advertising me because they're afraid that they won't get council grants or they won't get this. So they're not saying they're advertising me because I don't do the job. They're saying they're advertising me because they're afraid that I'll upset their position in society. They get sucked into the old school rule of thinking that somehow if you say something that's controversial that you'll lose clients or you'll upset their outcome. You don't. All you do is you actually draw new clients and people go, well, hey, why is this guy so polarizing? Why is he so controversial? I better pick him up and see what he's got to say. And I've got one client, he's a very, very conservative gentleman, and the first time I walked in and saw him, and I said to him, like, he said, I know your publication, that bunch of rubbish, I read it religiously. And I like that, because what he does is he's him and his mates sit down, they read my newspaper, they rubbish it, they say what a bunch of bollocks it actually is, and they have a long discussion over the beer for about 2 or 3 hours, and then they can't wait till next month because they know that I'll give them something else to talk about. That's all I'm trying to do. I'm not trying to preach the truth. I'm just trying to give people interesting information from a different perspective so that they can turn around and judge for themselves whether or not what I'm saying is true or whether maybe they should reevaluate the other sources of information they're getting.
I think this is probably one of the principal differences between you and me, Ben, is that you've actually got credibility and you actually maintain a lot of work in order to ensure that you retain credibility. I claim to have none, and in so doing, I'm quite credible because I'm not lying to people.
Well, it's an interesting issue of credibility because, you know, I've turned around and I've done reported on HAARP, High Altitude Atmospheric Research a program. It's possible links to the earthquakes in Christchurch. And I very categorically say, look, I'm not saying that this has caused the earthquakes in Christchurch, but my research of this technology says that A, it is it exists, and B, when it's used, it will create certain symptoms which we can find in large numbers in relation to correlate and to Christchurch. So there is a correlation. So it is not crazy to consider it. We should be treating this as a serious subject for debate. Now, on the surface, I have people turn around and they put things up on Facebook. Oh, he's crazy. He thinks that Christchurch was caused by HAARP, which is actually not what I said at all. But they'll say that. But then I can walk into a table of journalists, as I did recently in Queenstown, and there were people from Radio New Zealand, TV3, TV1, a couple of local media print guys. They all knew who I was. They all turned around and said, oh, yeah, I remember when you were giving Winston Peters a hard time at the Otago Foreign Policy School. And these guys give me credibility because they recognise and they've followed me for a long time that I do get results and that I'm normally a little bit, you know, ahead of the field because I will take risks. They like what I do because I do things that they can't do. I can take the risk, which, if they brought those stories to the editors, they'd be seeing a don't come Monday notice. So I get credibility in the right circle, and I get people who, whether it's organised crime or council issues, that are in the know, they listen very poignantly to what I'm saying. There may be people out there that don't like what I'm saying, so they'll go, oh, he's a conspiracy theorist. But you know what? They've been saying that for 11 years. In fact, they've been saying it longer. I've been, you know, working as a journalist for 20 years. I've got a 20-year track record of breaking stories well in advance of my colleagues, and hindsight has always proved me right. The only one that hasn't at the moment is HAARP, because that's the current thing that I've actually been reporting on. But, you know, I'd say watch the space. In 5 or 10 years' time, we'll actually acknowledge happily that, yes, this is now mainstream, that there are geo weapons. But, you know, you've got to take people like me that are willing to say, look, I'm not going to follow what the conventional line is, that are willing to take that football to put it on the field to begin with before you've actually got a football you can kick around. And that's what I've been doing all my life as a journalist, picking subjects that were not originally on the field, bringing them onto the field. I kick them as far as I can, and eventually the rest of the scrum joins in, picks them up and runs with them. But, you know, no one ever turns around and says, oh, yeah, you're the guy that did that. So you just have to shrug and get on with it and pick up the next football. And you know, hindsight is your greatest power, because people can say, what are they like now? As I said, I've got 20 years of stories that I've broken to show the fact that I know what I'm talking about and I do have good results. That's where my credibility comes from.
Well, and this is where the hear no evil, see no evil argument comes from. Ben Vigent has never been correct about anything. Really, how about this, this, and this? Oh, those aren't real articles. Those don't have any credibility. Oh, really? So have you read them? No, I haven't read them or anything like that. So you openly admit that you don't know what you're talking about, and you're accusing somebody of something which you have no evidence for because you won't look for any evidence of it.
People want to grab onto what they know, and it's very hard for them to shift from that status. But, you know, the reality is, I'm one of the first guys to ever report about the fact that New Zealand SAS were on active duty well before the Iraq War, and that they've been doing this, you know, since Vietnam, when officially we were told that they hadn't been out there since Vietnam. We now know that that's not true. I was one of the first guys to report on organised underage prostitution in Christchurch. We now know that that's now, you know, matter of fact. I was one of the first guys to report about New Zealand's involvement in the private military contract industry. We now know that's true. I was one of the first people to report about the role of arms falling into the Pacific that were having a destabilizing influence. I reported this and predicted the Solomons, PNG, and Fiji coups 2 and 3. You know, I've been doing this all my life, basically going out there, talking to the information, collecting the documentation, verifying it, putting it out there, whether it's not popular at the time to do it, being gunned down or ignored by my colleagues or by people who don't want to hear what I'm saying. And as then I say, you know, events come along, for example, like South Canterbury Finance in 2006, my second book, State Secrets 2, you know, I went in the building and I looked at all the businesses involved and did a big, huge, detailed chapter about what a dodgy company outfit this actually was. People go, no, South Canterbury's Finance, Alan Hubbard's awesome, it's great. And well, the building, South Canterbury Finance fell over 5 years later. Everything that I was saying came out in the wash. And, you know, that's what I've been doing all my life. Collecting the information, not letting myself be pushed around by what is the accepted convention or by what I know is, you know, going to make me popular, putting it out there anyway, and lo and behold, because I've actually researched my subject properly, I've checked my facts, the events unfold, and hindsight is my greatest power, and it's the one that I always go back to, and everyone gives me a hard time. I say, well, you can give me a hard time about this story, about what about this story. And as you see, what normally tends to happen is that they don't actually debate the subject matter or the content. They want to try and point fingers at you and attack the messenger.
Yeah, but, you know, crack a straw man out, you know, or something like that. Oh, this one tiny little insignificant thing 10 years ago, blah blah blah, that you weren't 100% correct on, only 99%. I'm going to focus on that 1%, and that's the reason why 100% of everything you've ever done for your entire life is wrong.
Well, you know, it's the only problem with them doing that is that up until, I said with the HAARP situation, it's a bit difficult because we've yet, you know, there's more information needs to come out to vindicate it. I'm on the edge right now, so I'll take a bit of time before the other stuff comes along. But, you know, apart from that story, there isn't a story that I can actually think of that I've ever reported on which actually hasn't actually proved to be correct. You know, I've been reporting about GCSB's links to the NSA. I've done that for 20 years. I've reported about the nominee shareholders that this has created a loop for money laundering. I report and had links to arms trafficking and terrorism. I reported on this. I reported on this from 1999, and it took up until 2008 for the rest of the mainstream media to actually catch up with me and say, "Well, actually, nominee shareholders are causing this problem. Yes, it's correct." And what was the response? It was John Key is going to carry out an investigation and look into it. That was the end of the story. We've never heard any more about it, but doesn't matter. It's now actually accepted. We now know that actually that is a fault. It just happens to be one fault that nobody wants to do anything about.
Can you explain the term gatekeeper to me in the media sense of the word?
I do know what you're talking about, but it's not one I know directly about. You know, the way I interpret a gatekeeper is someone that actually controls the flow of information, and he's the one that effectively decides what you'll see on your 6 o'clock news or your front page of your mainstream newspaper. You know, it's that situation where TV3 runs with a story, then you can guarantee that TV2, TV1, OTT are going to publish it the next day. If they don't run with a story and it only appears in, I don't know, my publication, the Postman Gazette, you may find it may take quite some time for that story to actually appear because that's not what the people who are controlling the system want you to hear. It's, you know, you turn around, you take a story to John Campbell, you don't just pick up a phone and talk to John Campbell directly. You've actually got to go through a whole series of flunkies whose entire job is to check you to make sure that you're not going to bring any information that's actually going to cause TV3 problems down the road. And if they think that you are going to be a problem to them or take something away from them, well, your news won't get to John Campbell. It'll get stopped beforehand. He won't even know that story exists. And, you know, you'll be sitting there grinding your teeth wondering why this really important story didn't come out. You know, on the other hand, the contrast is, you know, you look at like something like the Occupy movements, which they were showing people walking into main buildings in the United States. And I think it was up to about a year and a half in huge numbers on social media that people were seeing clips of these things, events occurring. It took a year and a half for the mainstream media to actually finally acknowledge that this event was occurring. It was only because the numbers became so overwhelmingly large that they actually had to acknowledge that this was occurring because they were starting to look like absolute dicks, you know. I'm saying, pretending that I know there was no Occupy movement, but everybody was going home that day and looking at the thousands of people, you know, invading an office.
You know, I get really angry at the media. I mean, we've got to wrap up the interview now, but I don't know. I had a thought, maybe I was just sleep deprived or something like that, but it'd be great to just take my big fat megaphone and a couple of cameras or something like that. And if they go to these big media hustle events and things of that nature, and just berate the media through the megaphone while they're trying to do their live broadcast and just ruin their day and just have fun at their expense. However, then that would cause me to get myself ostracized entirely from the media because they would all freaking hate me.
And that's what happened. I mean, I'm not a fan of the English art, which I know that you are, but I worked with them. And we had, my first book went straight to the bestsellers list and was there for 6 months. We had a lot of trouble getting media acknowledgement in that, of that story, even though I was only getting huge numbers on the bestsellers list, simply because Ian Wishart had upset a lot of people personally in TVNZ, so nobody would allow him a fair shake of the stick. Again, everything in State Secret 1 back then was controversial and considered to be outrageously conspiracy theory. Now there's not any, you could read that book today and you just accept this is life as normal. The one last thing I'll try and leave you with, Vinny, is that we did in February a story about how basically organised crime and dodgy elements were moving into the Octagon in Dunedin, and I basically put that out there, and I did it on social media, and it was interesting because, first of all, the mainstream media's ran stories in response that turned around and said, don't worry about gangs, they only hurt gang members, nothing to see, move along. Well, 2 weeks ago, we had a guy killed in the Octagon, beaten to death in the Octagon, and now we're actually starting to get businesses within the Octagon and council action and police action starting to do all the things that we said beforehand. The reason why is that they've been embarrassed, but it took a person actually dying before anybody would actually listen to what I was actually warning them.
Yeah. Sounds about right.
Yeah.
Thank you, council. You're the Shiite Muslim.
Pretty much. Well, and the latest thing they've just turned around and done just is that they've turned around and given the Mongol mob and Black Power contracts to cut wood and mow the grass because that's easier than actually dealing with the gangs. We just pay them off and make them go away.
Yeah, well, I mean, because if anybody would know about cutting grass, it'd be somebody who sells it for a living, huh?
Well, and the thing is, you know, Muldoon did this back in the 80s. Honorary Black Power and Mongol mob member Robert Muldoon, Prime Minister of New Zealand, he originally provided the POP schemes, which actually provided the financial foundation for the growth of gangs in the first place. So, you know, paying gangs off is actually not the way to do it. The way to do it is actually get media attention, focus on it, put them in the spotlight, and they shrivel away and crawl away. However, our mainstream media actually are basically cowards and don't want to do that, so they would rather just pay them off and ignore them and carry on business as usual. But that doesn't work, and luckily there's enough people out there in alternative media doing what I'm doing, but we just got to keep applying that pressure, create those media landmines so that the gatekeepers have no choice actually other than to report the stories because the stories have actually already been, you know, blown up in their faces.
Coercion, ladies and gentlemen, it's not always a bad thing. Thank you very much, Ben, for your contributions today. And quickly fire off your website again for those who are
interested. Website is www.postmanproductions.org, or you can listen on to me on Wednesday nights, 8:30 on 105.4 FM or FM. It's Otago Access Radio. If you just Google Otago Access Radio, you'll find that they've got their own website. They've got a live stream, so you can just click on the top left of the page and you can actually listen in to me as you like, or come and visit my website, www.postmanproductions.org, and check out the podcast. But I said the site will be back up next week. We're just doing maintenance on this week.
You've been listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. We are sponsored by the Crowdfunding Revolution book, How to Raise Venture Capital Using Social Media, authored by Kevin Lawton. The Range of Illusion by B. Holmes. Also check out our affiliates, iFinity FM, Rush FM, and Dagsy FM. Sponsors the High Tea Cafe in New Lynn there, supporting a lot of cannabis law reform places around New Zealand as well at the same time. Very good people and person Jeanette there. And also the Gourmet Soap Kitchen in Wagga Wagga. I just love saying Wagga Wagga for some reason. But it sounds like a frog, you know. If you like go out in the middle of the Australian bush or something like that, you're near a billabong and you hear the frogs going wagga wagga. That's what it reminds me of. Anyway, we'll see you again sometime, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you very much for listening.